Hi, it's Mina Kimes, host of the ESPN Daily Podcast. Wake up to the best story you'll hear all day. 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, where you get an inside look at the most interesting stories at ESPN, as told by the top reporters and insiders on the planet. The breaking news of Sports Center with the deep dive storytelling of 30 for 30. Today's episode is one I thought you'd especially like. Please listen and subscribe to ESPN Daily wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Deshaun has said, I can be as electrifying as anybody, but I'm going to play the position. Lamar has said, I want to learn the position as well. They both should be outlawed from the NFL if they pull this off, because they will not be stopped.
That was Hall of Fame quarterback Steve Young talking about this Sunday's matchup between two MVP candidates, Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson. It's the first time these electric quarterbacks have faced off in the NFL, after each overcame skepticism from people who doubted their potential to play the most important position in the game. Today, why so many got it wrong, and how Watson and Jackson are changing the narrative about dual-threat quarterbacks. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Friday, November 15th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Dell Small Business.
Okay, this is happening. It's happening. Dominique Foxworth. On ESPN Daily, the people left messages. They left the reviews. They said, we want Foxworth.
Why do you sound so surprised?
Dominique Foxworth is a former NFL player and a writer at The Undefeated. Dominique, Texans at Ravens, Deshaun Watson versus Lamar Jackson. I am extremely pumped to watch this football game.
I mean, how could you not? Like, there are playoff implications about, like, the first round bye. Then you have two MVP-caliber quarterbacks going face-to-face. It's not even that they are efficient. They are exciting. Like, Lamar Jackson is spinning people out of their shoes.
Looking and turn back and forth. Oh! He broke his ankles! Now he's got an entourage! And he's got a touchdown! He is Houdini!
And Deshaun Watson is taking feet to the face and throwing touchdown passes.
Watson, and he goes down. No, he stays on his feet, throws on the run, touchdown! Unbelievable!
This might be the most exciting game of the year.
Well, let's back up. This is not the first time these two quarterbacks have played. What happened during their last matchup?
Oh, yeah, so they played against each other in 2016 in college.
We have a QB duel in Death Valley. Lamar Jackson, the new sensation in this sport, but Deshaun Watson is the steely veteran.
Lamar Jackson was at Louisville, a lot less talented Louisville, going up against Clemson, and it was everything that you wanted.
Jackson gets the edge and scores another Jackson touchdown run. Watson in the pocket, shoots it downfield for Payne again, who makes a diving catch for a touchdown.
It lived up to the hype. Both of those guys had great games. I think Jackson had nearly 300 yards passing, and he had 160 yards rushing, two touchdowns rushing, one passing.
Jackson scores, standing up, and Louisville is roared right back in this game.
And Watson won the game with over 300 yards passing and five touchdowns through the air and 91 yards rushing.
Watson fires back, leg it open, rumbling free down inside the 10.
It was a great game, and it was close. Lamar Jackson and his team came up just short of the end zone.
Jackson flips it short, quick, works free, fights, spins out of bounds, did not get there, came up a yard short as Marcus Edmund saves the game for Clemson.
Back then, in 2016, what was the perception of both of these quarterbacks like?
Yeah, I mean, Lamar was riding pretty high. He ended up winning the Heisman Trophy that year. And Deshaun Watson didn't do too bad himself. He won a national championship that year. I think people were very, very high on both of them.
Right. Well, so as you mentioned, Deshaun went out and won the title that year. It seemed like a no-brainer that he would be a starting caliber NFL quarterback, a sure thing. And yet the draft comes around and he falls to number 12. He was picked behind Mitch Trubisky and Patrick Mahomes. What happened?
I don't know. It didn't make sense because he didn't just win the national championship. He came from behind, throwing the ball through the air, picking apart the Alabama defense, which was loaded with NFL talent. It seemed like, what more do you want?
And then the very next year, Lamar Jackson also faced skepticism when it came to his prospects in the NFL.
There were some respected people at this network and elsewhere who thought that maybe his best chance at succeeding in the NFL was to play receiver, which just made absolutely no sense. A Heisman Trophy quarterback who wasn't running the option in college. He was running a pro-style offense. Essentially, at least the passing plays were pro-style. Why anybody would think that he needed to switch positions was dumbfounding.
You and I watched him very closely, Dominique, ahead of the draft. We actually wrote a piece together about what it would take for him to succeed in the NFL. What was your conclusion from doing that?
We looked more deeply into a player's background and on-field performance than I had with any other player. And I remember being surprised at how developed a pocket passer he was. Because all his highlights, the highlights that resonate in your mind are him running. So you think, well, maybe he's like a running quarterback. But no, the criticism about him was not at all about his ability to read defenses or run a pro-style offense. The criticism about him was about his accuracy, which is fair. But he was much further along as far as being an NFL pro-ready quarterback than most guys who get kind of tagged with that dual threat label.
Right. I went to his pro day in Louisville for our piece to do some reporting. What did strike me about being there was during his throwing drills, seeing how bad his wide receivers were. They were dropping passes right and left.
Yeah, and I would think that having bad receivers, frankly, or just generally mediocre talent would bode well for him in the draft process, that people would recognize that he was that entire program. All the success that they had while he was there was because he was great. And it's interesting that you bring that up because somehow teams looked at him and didn't appreciate that. And then they looked at Deshaun Watson, and maybe part of the reason why he slid was because they had so much talent at Clemson. So, like, people looked at Deshaun Watson and they might have seen maybe a guy who was just orchestrating a bunch of great talent and not a great talent himself. I'm not sure how they could watch the film and come to that conclusion. At the time, I remember being kind of confused by it, but I don't understand how else you select him behind somebody like Mitchell Trubisky.
Dominique, what do you remember from watching the 2018 draft?
Well, first of all, I remember watching it in a dark room with you in Bristol. We were doing some sort of live show. It was really fun. And I remember Lamar Jackson showing up in that beautiful green suit and feeling optimistic about him landing on a team early, because I frankly thought he was the best quarterback in that draft. And then watching him slowly sit there and all the time passing by. And I remember thinking that there's no way that they're going to let this Heisman Trophy winning, uber talented quarterback go into the second day. But the Ravens swooped in and grabbed him.
With the 32nd pick in the 2018 NFL Draft, the Baltimore Ravens select Lamar Jackson, quarterback, Louisville.
All right.
While I'm sure that he was uncomfortable in that moment and he did not enjoy sitting there in the green room with the cameras keep checking on his sad face, but it worked out because I don't think that he would have the success at many other teams.
You use the word confused to describe your reactions to watching these quarterbacks drop in the draft, but really, I think you have some thoughts as to why it happened, no?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't confused or shocked. I said that because it seemed like the right thing to say. Like, I'm black, Mina. I'm very aware of the unconscious or maybe sometimes conscious bias that goes into the decision making that happens in football and in sports beyond that. It just is difficult when you assume that there's so much riding on making the right decision that people have a difficult time getting past whatever biases they are to try to succeed. So, like, I'm not surprised. I think those players that I brought up earlier, like, the contrast there, I think, makes it more glaring than anything else. Is like, when you look at Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson, why are you more prone to see someone like RG3 or see a career path that's not as successful than you are to see a career path of a quarterback who did succeed? There's just a kind of faulty narrative out there that I think a lot of people, whether knowingly or not, kind of ascribe to, is that mobile or athletic, dual threat, or frankly, just black quarterbacks don't pan out when they get to the NFL.
Coming up, how Deshaun and Lamar proved the doubters wrong.
So, Deshaun Watson was picked 12th. He lands in Houston, a city, a team that to that point had, I think it's fair to say, a pretty tortured history when it comes to quarterbacks. What happened during his rookie season?
Yeah, so for whatever reason, he didn't start the season. We found a coach in Bill O'Brien who was on the hot seat, and he finally turned to Deshaun Watson a few weeks into the season, and he was outstanding. He had a game against the Patriots, which was kind of his welcome to the NFL moment, or at least he welcomed the NFL to Deshaun Watson.
Watson, strong throw to the end zone, caught, touchdown, and the Texans take the lead.
He led them to a fourth quarter lead with less than 2 minutes left. It was 33-28, and it took Tom Brady 2 minute heroics to get that win. He did that as a rookie against the Patriots. And then he went on a run after that where he threw for 4 touchdowns against the Titans. He threw for 5 against the Chiefs. He threw for 3 against the Browns and then 4 against the Seahawks. Like, he walked into the NFL and just lit it on fire and people were believing. And then he tore his ACL in practice.
Which, by the way, it's important to note that that was a non-contact injury, right? It wasn't because of, like, oh, he had another mobile quarterback getting tackled and getting knocked around. He wasn't actually hit when he tore his ACL.
Yeah, surprisingly, the risk that he puts himself in is not because he's running the ball. It's because he's holding on to the ball and he's in the pocket. I think he opens himself up to a lot more hits that way. But I would much rather have Deshaun Watson, where my ceiling is the Super Bowl, and maybe we have a bad year because he gets hurt. But at least every year we walk in, we have a chance at the Super Bowl.
I think his rookie season was interesting, Dominique, because, as you mentioned, he wasn't the starter. Right, I believe it was Tom Savage off the top of my head. Then Bill O'Brien, when he brings him in after Savage goes down, he completely changes the offense on the fly.
Watson protected, escaping, going to run for it. He get a block on the edge, he's going to get there, first down and more. And Deshaun Watson inside the 10, into the end zone for a touchdown. 49 yards.
All of a sudden now, this team feels different. Right? It feels different.
We saw that with Deshaun Watson, and we also saw it with Lamar Jackson. When Joe Flacco got hurt and the Ravens went on a nice winning streak and again made the playoffs and saved John Harbaugh's job, it was in mid-season. And I can't think of two quarterbacks who are more different in styles of play than Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson. Lamar had, what, 8 really good games in the row? And then he lost in the playoffs, and all of a sudden everyone was like, see? He can't play in this league. Wait till a team gets a chance to game plan for him. Wait till they get an offseason to prepare for him. He's going to fail. He didn't play well in that game, but he came back this year when everyone had an offseason to prepare for him, and he's better than he was as a rookie. And everyone spent their offseason planning for how to stop this, and they still can't stop it somehow. They're worse at stopping it than they were last year.
How did the Ravens approach this offseason?
Well, they went all in. It seemed once they selected Lamar Jackson in the draft, and then he showed some promise last year, they decided to make everything about their team built around the success of Lamar Jackson. Most importantly, they elevated Greg Roman to offensive coordinator, and he's important because he had success with this type of offense or with this type of athlete with Colin Kaepernick, and he's a guy who could develop a scheme around him that benefited him.
You mentioned Greg Roman. For a long time with Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco, there was a argument, I think perpetuated by people who didn't think he should be in the league, that, well, you know, he was a one-hit wonder, his style of playing football doesn't work, you know, he doesn't fit into NFL systems. Do you think what we've seen this season from Roman and Lamar Jackson undercuts that in some ways?
I mean, I think that not just that undercuts it, I think if you just look around the league, it has been undercut. So while Lamar Jackson is an extreme example of this, if you look through the draft recently, like Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, quarterback running is something that is a part of the league now in a way that it's not going to go away.
When was the moment this season when Lamar Jackson finally silenced the doubters?
Yeah, I think it's easy to go back to a few weeks ago when they beat the Patriots, who had the best defense in the league and statistically one of the greatest defenses of all time. And we think of Bill Belichick as a guy who is so great at scheming defenses to stop an offense's best weapon. And we obviously know Lamar Jackson and that team's offense, is the best weapon is Lamar running the ball. Bill Belichick couldn't stop it.
Lamar Jackson takes the snap, rolls to the right. Now he retreats to the left. He's bottled up. He escapes. 15, 10. Jackson along the far sideline, steps out of bounds at the 5. Mr. Impossible escapes a vice grip and turns a sure loss of 5 or 6
into a gain of 12.
Lamar didn't put up crazy numbers, but it seemed as if when they needed a play, Lamar was able to get it. And I think that was the moment where not all the doubters were silenced, because it seems like they're moving goalposts for some people because they want him to fail. But it was hard to construct an argument, any argument outside of, well, he's not going to stay healthy, or let's see him do it when they're coming from behind. Like, there is no argument to say that he is not effective when the best coach and the best defense can't stop him.
What do you expect to see out of the two quarterbacks in this matchup?
Yeah, I expect big plays, and I expect for them to succeed. I mean, as exciting as both of them are, neither of them have a great defense to support them. So I don't think it's going to be a low-scoring game. It's going to be a high-scoring game where it comes down to which one of those quarterbacks can be more effective, particularly late in the game.
Well, looking at ESPN's NFL MVP stock watch, the top three candidates right now are Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, and Deshaun Watson. I think the public largely agrees with that. Do you think that this season and what these players have accomplished has changed attitudes towards mobile quarterbacks and perhaps erased the stigma to some degree?
Yeah, I think the stigma should have been erased a long time ago. So, like, honestly, I have no confidence that given the opportunity to draft a mediocre pocket passer and a potentially dynamic dual threat athletic quarterback, I have no hopes that teams will make the decision to go in the more athletic direction. I think this does give them license to go to a GM or a GM to go to his owner and say, we're going to do something different. You know how the Ravens had success doing something different? We're not going to draft this guy. We're not going to run the offense that everyone else is running. We have such diversity of style, in part because of the athletes that we have in this game. You can go from watching Lamar Jackson to Deshaun Watson, who are very different, to then going to watch Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes. It's just like a different game, no matter who you look at. And I personally love it.
Well, I look forward to watching these two quarterbacks play and then both of them finishing second and third to Russell Wilson in MVP voting.
I'm telling you, Russ is going to fall off. Tough second half schedule.
You stop it.
Lamar
you stop
is getting
this.
That trophy. It's true. I'm sorry. I love him. Russell's great, but Lamar's getting a trophy. Watch. Bet on it.
I'll be back in a moment with one more story. Here's another story I want you to know. Last week, a black cat broke the internet when he, or she, ran onto the field during Monday Night Football, disrupting a Giants-Cowboys game for what felt like an eternity. It was an incredible sports moment. But the Monday Night Football cat, who, by the way, is still at large, was hardly the first animal to bring an important game to a pause. There was a squirrel that ran onto the field during an NFL game at Wembley Stadium, the jackrabbit who scored a touchdown during an Oregon-Stanford game, and about 20 years ago, a chocolate lab named Tubby who streaked onto the field during a Georgia-Kentucky game. A story that's notable not just because it produced one of the more memorable game calls in football history, but because Tubby belonged to one of my colleagues, ESPN senior writer Mark Schlabach. Now, according to a piece that Mark published this week, Tubby was named after Tubby Smith, then Georgia's basketball coach. And he was, by all accounts, a bad dog. Well, let me correct that. There are no bad dogs. All dogs are good dogs. But Tubby was a mischievous dog, and he had a penchant for escaping. So on the day of the game, Mark was in the press box at Sanford Stadium covering it for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution when Georgia safety Kirby Smart, yes, that Kirby Smart, made an interception, and then this happened.
Somebody's chocolate lab is out there. Look at that.
What's that?
Somebody's dog is out there, Lauren. Get it off the field. Yeah. You know that's your dog. Look at him. We're going to have to get the dog off the field. Now he's gone to the Georgia huddle. I wonder who released him.
That was Larry Munson, Georgia's legendary play-by-play announcer who passed away a few years ago. Now, I have two favorite details from this moment. One is the visual of Georgia's mascot, Ugga the Bulldog, looking extremely forlorn as he watches Tubby run free. Two is this quote from Kentucky offensive coordinator Mike Leach. Yes, that Mike Leach. The dog didn't have great straight line speed, but he could make you miss, and he made a lot of people miss that day. In any case, unlike Monday Night Football Cat, Tubby was eventually corralled with the help of a hot dog. He's no longer with us, but his memory lives on, and it may have inspired some copycat crimes. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Michael Baltierra, Troy Farkas, Alexander Hyacinth, Michael Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, happy birthday, Eve, Christopher Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. I'll talk to you Monday.